The statistics are so clear of the levels of depression and suicide in older adults and high achieving men especially.
Fear and hesitancy, those are not words that anyone in the general public would put with retirement.
In retirement, we're going to lose the structure. We're going to lose identity. We become an I used to be.
One of the things you get from work is cognitive stimulation. You know, your brain is a use it or lose it organ.
If you retire and you say, well, I'm just going to sit on the couch, binge Netflix, you're in for a world of hurt. It's not the rest of your life of Sundays. It is, how do I create something new? How do I take the train off the track and start exploring again?
Hello, my fellow teenagers. Most of us picture retirement the same way. You clock out for the last time, and from there, it's pure bliss. It's the reward we spend our whole working lives looking forward to. But what if that picture is wrong, and retirement is actually one of the most complicated transitions you'll ever face? My guest today is Michael F. Kay. He built a successful financial life planning firm, worked for more than 4,000 people, and wrote two books on aligning money with values. But after decades of guiding people towards life after work, he found that what made the next stage satisfying had little to do with savings and everything to do with how well they prepared for who they were going to become. That's the heart of his Chapter X framework. In this conversation, we'll get into why so many people feel blindsided when they get there, the link between purpose and staying sharp as we age, and what it really takes to prepare, not just financially, but emotionally. If you're approaching this chapter or you love someone who is, this one will change how you think about it. Welcome to the Keen on Aging podcast. I'm Dr. Corinne Allman, and each week I sit down with experts and people living later life with purpose to share honest conversations and practical insights you can use to live this chapter of life on your terms. I'm going to jump right in, and I want to ask you, if someone is unhappy with their life after they've retired, and they take all of the great advice that you're about to give us on this podcast and apply it, how will their life change for the better?
Wow. That's a big question, right?
That's right.
And just packed with so many possibilities. You know, the idea of Chapter X was all about helping men kind of regain a part of themselves that kind of got washed away or hidden during all the decades of work and focus on achievement. And, you know, one of the reasons that I decided to hesitantly write the book, you know, How to Craft Your Chapter X, was because it is so complicated for so many. Because here you go from living this structured, focused existence into a blank canvas. So to try and circle back and answer your question in as direct a way as possible, I think that in examination of what we've been through, what we've experienced, what our outlook is, we can live an incredibly meaningful and joyful life after we've put down our focus towards of earning a living in our career. And I think that's like, you know, kind of putting the sprinkles on top of the on top of the cupcake, right?
Tell us what Chapter X is and why it's different from our traditional ideas about retirement.
The genesis of Chapter X actually is when I was in the eighth grade taking algebra, which I detested down to my toes. And the teacher kept harping, you got to solve for X, you got to solve for X, you got to solve for X. So this has always kind of stayed with me. So as I was, you know, as I was approaching retirement, I started thinking about, I've got to solve for this problem, this situation, and solve for it to me was, what do I need? To what information do I need? What tools do I need? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I look at Chapter X as a purposeful kind of way of helping men who are coming out of this maybe high pressure, high achievement life to be able to reinvent themselves in a way that is the most satisfying and joyful. So it's not just like, okay, well, and I know men who, they, you know, all they think about is playing golf. Or I know people say, oh, I go for a walk, I come back, I read, I have a cup of coffee, maybe I'll take a ride. And it's like, and I'm like, well, if that's what gives you joy, wonderful. But there are a lot of men who they want a life that's rich and full because they've had a whole life that was rich and full and meaningful. It's like, now, how do we do that outside of your professional life?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to focus on the thing you said about it being complicated, because I think we are all kind of sold this version of retirement that it's really going to be uncomplicated, right? Like, you retire and it's going to be bliss and you're going to do nothing but things you enjoy. And that's why we all look forward to it so much. So I think a lot of people are probably surprised to hear you call it complicated. So why is it complicated?
Sure, because as I alluded to, during our work life, we know what gets us out of bed in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. We know what our marching orders are for the day, whether we're going to work 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, whatever it is that we're going to put in the office, at the, you know, at in the boardroom, in the hospital, whatever we're, you know, in the courtroom, whatever it is that we're doing, we are laser focused. And our vision is towards this end that we know we're supposed to achieve. When we stop doing that, we don't account for the fact that we're going to lose a lot of things that we're used to. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose the structure. We're going to lose identity, right? Mm-hmm. We become an I used to be. And I hear this over and over and over from people who, in fact, I just wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about, I called it Echoes, of me walking into an office building where my trainer now has her gym. And it was an office building just like my office building used to be. And seeing people walking in with their briefcases and their backpacks. And I'm like, that used to be me. So there was that moment of, this feels kind of weird. You know, that's not me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of comments from men writing back saying, yeah, I get it. And one of them was a doctor who was a gerontologist, who said he was back at his hospital that he worked for 40 years, and he went in to speak to his doctor on some test results, and he said there was that otherworldly feeling of not belonging, of people didn't have time to talk to you. So you hear this all the time, this disconnection, because what do you get in your workplace? You have social connection, you have identity, you have purpose, you have all these things that you've created or has been created for you to kind of be that train on the track. Mm-hmm. In retirement, and I hate the word, this idea of it's not the rest of your life of Sundays. You know, it is, how do I create something new? How do I take the train off the track and start exploring again?
Yeah.
You know, when we're young, everything is new and exciting. Mm-hmm. Everything is interesting. We have this view of, you know, we're little sponges. I watch my granddaughters and everything is exciting. But as we get older and as we get into our profession and into our careers, our aperture kind of narrows, mm-hmm. towards, you know, what our mission is. So how do we reopen it? Okay. How do we see ourselves as more than our job title? You know, mm-hmm. that statement, you know, who am I when I'm no longer my job?
Yeah.
When I'm no longer my title. It's chilling, because this is who in many men's minds, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember last summer attending a social gathering, and most of the people there were all retirees. And I would kind of, and I didn't know a lot of them very well. And I kind of going from group to group, being the kind of butterfly that I am, kind of just circulating around. And I'm hearing these war stories. They're all war stories. And I don't care. I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you used to be. I'd rather know who you're becoming.
Yeah.
You know?
Who are you now?
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah. I was just having lunch with a friend, and I was telling him how I have decided this summer I've dedicated to making sure I'm not in a rut. Making sure that what do I want to put into my life? What do I want to explore next? And is there anything I want to take out? And I want to continue this reassessment of things to make sure that it's aligned with my values. You know, so that's kind of, you know, the idea when you step off of the when you get off the train, you are now there to explore. And if you don't have a mindset that says, wow, I can explore it, this is exciting. Or I'm just this attorney, I'm just this doctor, and I can't see anything beyond that, you're in for perhaps decades of misery. And the statistics are so clear, you know, of the levels of depression and suicide in older adults and high achieving men especially.
Because it's a big transition, and it's something we're going to have to navigate, and it won't just happen. Like, it won't just magically, you know, fall into place. You're going to have to think about it and challenge yourself.
Yeah. I mean, when we think about the number of transitions we've been through during our life, we've been through dozens and dozens and dozens, from our earliest childhood to, you know, yesterday, right? We go through all these transitions, and every time we go through it, we hopefully learn something about ourselves.
Yeah.
But every one of those transitions requires a level of maybe fear, hesitancy, apprehension, anxiety, you know? And as I say over and over again to people, and they look, especially with when I tell my kids, you know, no one ever died from discomfort. Right. Right.
Yeah.
No one ever died from it. You just don't feel comfortable. But that's OK, because in that discomfort is the juice. That's the excitement. That's telling you you're about to embark on a new experience.
Yeah. It's the opportunity for growth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And staying where you are in your comfort zone is the place of death.
Yeah. It's just so interesting because I think all those words you just used about fear and hesitancy and all those things, those are not words that anyone in the general public would put with retirement. I mean, they think it's going to be great. And so it's a really different, I mean, I think it's incredibly accurate. I hear that all the time too. It's just not what people think it's going to be when they get there.
Sure.
So I want to circle back to something you said way back at the beginning that I picked up on. You said you were hesitant to write the book.
Yeah.
Obviously, you overcame that hesitancy, and it exists. Wait, I have a copy right here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I want to know why. Why were you hesitant to write it?
In all honesty, I've written two books before, and I knew it was from, and when I wrote them, I was still in, you know, during my work life, and it was a lot of work. It was a lot of focus and things like that. And there's so many people talking about retirement. I just didn't know whether I could really get it out on the page the way that I wanted it to. And I struggled with it. And I kept getting little nudges from the beyond, I'd say, of writing the book, you know, from lying in Shavasana in a yoga class to, you know, hearing in my head, write the book, I kept pushing it away until I finally embraced it. And it was a very different process than the first two books I wrote.
Yeah. I think you make a great point, though. There are a lot of books on retirement right now. I think there are a lot of books on aging well, and that is a hot topic because we have a large generation of older adults, you know, and more every day. So I think it is going to be even more important to keep having these conversations and keep having all the voices contribute, because it's, like you said, it's not what people think it's going
to
be.
One of the reasons that I did decide to do it was, and I related in the book, was kind of my story of preparing for retirement and feeling really strongly about it and feeling really excited about it. And then my experience of hitting the wall.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to ask you, is how did you prepare and how should people prepare, since now we know it's not exactly what they've sold us. It's a false bill of goods. So what do we do?
Yeah. And yeah, well, the false bill of goods is that it's easy, or that it doesn't take work, or that it doesn't take grit to get through the obstacles. But I had been preparing, I owned a financial life planning practice with advisors in various areas around the country. And I had a younger partner, and we had structured a buy sell agreement and a transition. So, you know, we decided to trigger the transition. And as we were going through the process, I started thinking about, well, what does my retirement look like for me? I started asking myself the questions that I asked my clients.
You know, you had all those years of asking that, and you got to reflect.
Exactly. And, you know, and for all the men who would say, oh, when I retire, I'm going to play golf. You know, it's like, and I would look at them and go, really? Like 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year for the next 20, 30 years? Mm-hmm. That's it? What are you going to do if it rains? You know, so, or if your hip goes out or something. Uh-huh. So, and I'm not a golfer, so that wasn't even on the table. So I started thinking about the things that I was interested in and the things that kind of lit me up. And I've always kind of been curious, and I've always been a bit of a renegade when it comes to the things that I've done. And, so I started making lists of possibilities. Mm-hmm. Not definites. Nothing was a definite in terms of the specific activities. But I started building the framework. What goes into a healthy retirement? You know, health. Well, first of all, financial security. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, I was my last career was as a financial planner. And I wrote two books about money. I lectured about money. I toured the world about talking about money. One of my decisions going into retirement was, I am not talking about money anymore. Done. Finished. You cannot pay me to talk about money. Done. And the only reference to money in this book is in the introduction. I said, if you are not financially secure, close the book and go deal with that.
Right.
So one of the aspects is, okay, make sure you're financially secure. Now, what are the other aspects of a healthy life afterwards? And that is your physical health, your mental health, your emotional, you know, your mental and emotional growth. What kind of things are stimulating to your brain? Mm-hmm. What are the values that you, what do you care about? Mm-hmm. And so these are the things that I started writing. And then I started writing about boundaries. What are the things that I will do? What are the things I won't do? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I said I will not do was talk about money.
Right.
The other thing that I said I will not do is I will not allow the shoulds or say yes to things that I don't want that are not joyful. I will eject anything that's based on a should. You should do this. You should do that. That's not coming from a place of joy. Mm-hmm. I examine the social relationships. What are the people that are just maybe toxic that I need to kind of get out of my universe? Mm-hmm. The things that I put on my should list were explore, experience, try, be open-minded, go in with that kind of curiosity of experiences. For example, I just finished an 8-week workshop on pottery, on a wheel. And I'd never done that before. And I was like, you know, you're holding the clay and it's, you know, like going like this and you're trying to, and it's like, and the teacher who was a young graduate student was like, you're going to get frustrated. And I said, no, dude, I am not going to get frustrated. This is fun. Mm-hmm. This is an experience. There, I have no expectations of mastery here.
Right.
I am a novice and I'm enjoying the noviceness of it, right, or the novicehood of it, whatever the right word is. I'm enjoying this being a beginner and looking at it from a beginner's mind. Not that I've got to create a piece of artwork that is going to go into the museum. Like, right, that's not going to happen. And I have no expectation of it. One of the things that I did, I was actually growing up, I was a classically trained trumpet player. And at age 18, 19, through another story, which I won't bore you with, I decided to put music out of my life and as a player. You know, when I was 14 years old, I was studying with a trumpet player from the New York Philharmonics who had two students. One was me at 14 and the other was in the Juilliard School of Music. Mm-hmm. And he literally broke me to tears every week.
Oh.
But I became a really good player. But I come from, both my parents were professional musicians, my uncle a professional musician. And so music was part of my life in a very big way. And I decided I was going to try playing again, but this time with a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that I'm going to be the world's greatest trumpet player, but that I'm going to try and have fun with it. So my exploration was really all these thoughts about what could be fun, and not to go in with an expectation that it has to be this or has to be that. What it has to be is joyful.
Right. Right. What a great way to approach it. So I just turned 50 last year. I'm 51 now. And this was the first year that I qualify for the senior games in my area. Like, I got the letter saying, you qualify for the senior games. And there was this part of me that was like, what the, do you mean that I qualify for the senior? Like, so I was offended, right? And then I was like, no way. I have to be a teenager, right? I have to approach my aging with positivity and joy. And I was like, I am going to go play in the senior games. And so I have done, I did the power walk, the 5K power walk, and I did bowling. I did doubles bowling with a friend of mine. I don't bowl. Bowling is not my skill set. That is a new task for me. But it's that I'm going to go do something fun, right? I'm going to go do it and we'll see how it goes. And we had a great time. And that is really all that mattered. But it's that sort of approach, right? To go, instead of going, I'm not going to senior games. I'm only, you know, trying to ward it off in some way. I was like, no, I'm going to go start doing this. This is going to be fun.
You know, Corinne, it's so important, your statement, because our society tells us that, you know, young is valuable, old is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, and when you, and so that's that message that it's just become part of our oxygen,
mm-hmm,
is so detrimental and so untrue. That, you know, but I can certainly understand that knee-jerk reaction, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, it's like people who won't ask for a discount, you know, the senior discount, because they don't want to admit that they're, you know, whatever age they are.
Yeah.
And like, hey, I've made it this long. I know people who haven't.
Yeah. And I'll be glad to keep my money. Thank you very much. Give me that discount.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious about your thoughts on early retirement. So, you know, we're talking about maybe traditional retirement age, and I hear so many people, or, you know, like influencers and things, talking about, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to be able to retire at 35. You know, what's your perspective on an early retirement? Like, is that a good idea, or how does that change things?
Boy, when you talk about retiring at age 35, I, you know, the alarm bells go off, because it's like, have you really lived long enough to gain a perspective of the world and of life and, mm-hmm, of what you need and what you want? I became friends with a guy who retired in his early 50s, and which I consider a super early retirement. And he got involved on a board of a local theater company, and he's very involved, and he does some traveling and things like that. And he, after our conversations, he's a really purposeful person. Mm-hmm. He's completely dedicated and immersed into what he's doing. But if you retire and you say, well, I'm just going to sit on the couch and, you know, binge Netflix, or worse, watch the news, you know, you're in for a world of hurt, you know, and what good can come out of that for yourself or for the world? Because at the end of the day, I think if we have achieved a level of success and knowledge and experience, our job is to, how do we take what we've gained and help someone else through that? Mm-hmm. It might be partially financial. It might not be financial at all, but it might be just doing something that makes the world a better place, that makes people that you know, or a community, a person, a situation, a charity, whatever, an organization, help make life better for someone else.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we've earned that, and we've garnered all this knowledge. So how do we not, you know, what are we going to do with it? Just die with it in a lonely room someplace?
Well, I think there's a couple of things you touched on there. One is the importance of purpose. Whatever that purpose is, maybe it's joining the board of the local theater company, maybe it's doing consulting work part-time, maybe it's volunteering somewhere else, but that idea that we all need to feel needed or purposeful, like that we matter. And if you retire and are sitting on the couch and watching Netflix all day, There's not a lot of purpose in that. And you don't necessarily feel like other people need you or want you around because that's all you're doing. And there's very good research that shows if you just sit around and do that after retirement, that is a fast track for cognitive decline.
For sure.
Because one of the things you get from work is cognitive stimulation, right? Your brain is challenged all the time at work. And when you stop doing that, you know, your brain is a use it or lose it organ, just like your body. And it does not want to sit around and veg all day and, you know, watch TV. It wants to be active and be challenged.
Exactly. And you know, my premise is to start with values. Mm-hmm. What do you value? Do you value family? Do you value relationships? Do you value learning? Do you value, you know, what is it? And the beautiful thing is that everyone gets their choice to determine what they value. The next step then is, you know, if you value living as long as possible with the greatest level of well-being, you know what, you check the box. Mm-hmm. Intellectual, physical, you know, all the other things that are necessary to age healthily. Mm-hmm. You know, like as if we don't have enough challenges, right? So it's like, these are the things we need to do. We need to exercise. We need to eat right. We need to get sleep, you know, and, you know, one of the things I hear from people all the time is, oh, you know, I'm sleeping 4 hours a night. It's like, if you're sleeping 4 hours a night, you need to get help.
Right.
Because that is a fast track to dying.
It's not good
right?
for you.
And it's not good for you. And you got to figure out how to do that. And maybe it means, you know, eliminating or reducing your alcohol intake, mm-hmm. or the amount of sugar that you're taking in, or things like that. And I'm, you know, I don't mean to turn this into a medical show, but you know that you know that there's an impact from the things that we take into our body and how they impact our sleep and everything and our mental cognition. So, you know, the idea is like, take your values and then think about, what are some of the activities that are associative to those values. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I'm blessed to have two granddaughters that are local, and I'm punished that I have one of my granddaughters, the youngest one is in Chicago, but my greatest joy is spending time with them, you know, and you know, it's like, okay, so I can I take her to school? Can I pick the other one up from school? Like, can we go out and, you know, do something? Can we go to the park? Those are things that are joyful for me. Just spending the time.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I make sure that I do. And I relish it.
Yeah. The you talking about your family made me think about spouses or partners and how retirement is often a renegotiation.
For sure.
Of your relationship and habits, home habits with your spouse or partner. What advice do you give for thinking about how to structure that transition or what kind of conversations people need to have?
Yeah, those are big. I mean, if the wife was either working outside the house or not, and the husband was away, you know, for decades and decades, mm-hmm. it's like all of a sudden you're there 24/7. There's going to be problems, okay? Guaranteed. And I was very fortunate that Dorian Mincer contributed a chapter in my book on that topic of relationships and having conversations around, you know, how's this going to look? How does this look to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually retired a year or so before my wife. And so I, you know, so when she retired, I said, you know, you need to kind of get into the groove here. This is, you know, you're in my territory now.
And how did that go?
It's gone really well because, you know, she's got things that she's committed to and is involved with as I do. And, you know, it's like we touch base. Okay. What does your day look like? You know, who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And, you know, there's no other way to handle it, you know, so, yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story. My mom was a school teacher for 30 years, and, you know, she started at 25, and so she could retire at 55, right?
Yeah.
And here's all I'll say. It took about 6 months, and she was back to teaching part-time.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of that was the experience of being at home. And my dad has always had a job where he worked from home or ran a business from home. And so when she retired, all of a sudden he was like, well, now you can do everything with me all the time. Right. And all of a sudden she was like, I'm not sure this is how. And so she went back to work within 6 months and then worked part-time for many years after that. But it was really interesting to watch because clearly they were not quite on the same page about how this was going to go.
Yeah. I had a client years ago who all he wanted to do was retire. Mm-hmm. And he was an attorney, name on the door, successful law firm. And he said, all I want to do is retire. And we looked at the numbers and said, look, he had a second family with younger kids and college and weddings and all the things that he was committed to. So I said to him, look, what's the issue? Why is it that you really feel this strongly about retiring? And he goes, you know, like the commute is a problem and blah, 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 blah. So I said, well, you know, your name's on the door. I said, can't you like maybe work from home a day or two a week? Mm-hmm. And he thought about it. He goes, yeah. And, you know, 6 months later, he comes in. He goes, I'm never going to retire. I love it. I'm sitting on my deck with my laptop. And we're talking. And his wife looks at me. She goes, if he's home one more day a week, I'm going to kill him and then you. And I just sat there. Going, yeah.
You're like, whoops.
Yep. Yeah, I was responsible, you know. Yeah. But, you know, it was one of those moments that, you know, you realize that, boy, you know, without conversation mm-hmm. and without this thought that, well, how is this going to impact the other person?
Mm-hmm.
And when the idea came up, she didn't say, hey, how's this going to look? And he didn't give it a second thought.
Right.
So it was all about him.
Yeah.
And you can't go into this change. You can't go into any kind of real transition without those conversations.
Yeah. Or you can, but then you could end up in some really uncomfortable conversations later on.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just walking, you know, you're walking on the tightrope over the flaming vat of oil.
Yep. Well, Michael, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time today. Is there anything we did not mention that you feel like would be important for our listeners to hear as a final thought?
I guess the final thought is that, you know, understand that any change requires, or any change is going to lead into disruption. And if you take that into account, say, okay, there's going to be obstacles, there's going to be upheaval, there's going to be discomfort. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do to prepare for that mentally? And one of the ways that I try to get people to do is to think about all the transitions they've been through before and how that they've come through it, what they've learned from failure. What they've, you know, and that's where we learn is not from success, but we learn from our failures is how, you know, are we resilient? You know, what are the tools we've learned through our lifetime? Resilience, flexibility, mm-hmm. communication skills, learning, problem solving, all these tools that we hone during our life. We need them when we start to walk into this next chapter.
Yeah. Wonderful. Where can people find you?
So they can find me online at www.michaelfkay.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, on the website. If you want to receive, because for Chapter X, I write 2 or 3 blog pieces a week. I do a monthly Zoom meeting for men who want to come on and just talk real stuff. We don't talk sports, we don't talk politics, and I don't care what you're drinking. We're talking about real experiences of what this transition looks like. I do a weekly podcast that, so if people want to receive that information, there's no cost. To me, this is part of my joy in this chapter is helping people deal with this part of their life.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Corinne, it was my joy.